Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Living free.
Welcome. This is a Living Free show on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM on your AM radio, and 3CR on digital radio. Hi, I'm Bill, and with my show co-host Zakia, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We pay our respects. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and acknowledge that this land was stolen and that sovereignty was never ceded. Each week on the Living Free show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling and food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Also, please note that the Living Free show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence. So please consider your well-being and that of others while listening. My guest today is a compulsive gambler who's recovering with the help of Gamblers Anonymous. I'd like to welcome Sue to the show. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good. I'm very good. Now, we've also got Zakia.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good. Thank you. See you on my three. Right. Okay. Just getting set up here. So we usually start talking about growing up and the things that influenced you in your earlier years. So Sue, would you like to sort of give us a bit of a background on your early life? And the sort of things that interested you and I guess influenced the way your life went.
I'm a middle child, six siblings. So I'm the middle child, so three older, three younger, and I saw myself as a lost child. It was a dysfunctional family. Dad was always at work and Mum was home, having to be the disciplinarian. Being the lost child, I was always forgotten at times of being picked up from different activities, things like that.
My dad had his own business, so when we were kids, so my mum used to send us off during the holidays to his work, and I remember actually playing a game of throwing coins against the wall, and whoever got the closest won the coins. And although I wasn't competitive, I think that was the start of my journey into gambling. I left school at because of things that were happening at home, I wouldn't study, and I wasn't was always called a daydreamer. So I left school after year nine, and my parents sent me to business college for six, which I did for 6 months, learning bookkeeping. So I went off to work in an office, and during that time, I got an interest, because sometimes I didn't want to go home. So after I'd finished work, I'd go and play the pinball machines, which I loved, the flashing lights. And I started to get a bit competitive there, where I had to beat the highest score, the challenge. So I would regularly do that. And then as the during that time, I was able to poker machines were introduced into Melbourne, or into Victoria. And so as I was working long, progressed into the work environment, and was working in a computer section. And so I was working long hours. So I would often go to a venue after I'd finished work. That was a 24-hour place, venue. And I'd see it as a way of de-stressing before going home to sleep and then returning back to work. Again, I didn't see it as an issue.
Yeah. Did you see it as a refuge?
Yeah, sort of like somewhere to switch off.
Yeah.
And just just get mesmerized by the machines.
Yeah. A lot of women talk about it as being a safe place, that they feel secure being there. It's well lit. It's, you know, there.
Yeah, and nobody would hinder you. Nobody would annoy you or ask you questions. I think that was the other thing. That sort of like you could just go there, be able to just, switch off and not be disturbed. Definitely.
Yeah. Did you have any problem controlling your gambling at that point?
Not at that stage, no. Not that I'm aware of. No. I think I was able to manage it. I would set myself limits, so I'd know that okay, I've been able to have this amount of cash, and so I could just go and donate that to the venue, and then once it'd gone, I'd head off home.
Did losing it worry you?
Sometime, and not in the early days. I would just say, okay, that's gone, and next time I won't take as much money so I don't lose as much. That sort of approach. And it was, I think when I started, it was before ATMs were around. So you had to actually go to the bank to be able to withdraw money as well. So sort of like I had to be able to manage how much I was spending. So I was able to have some control over that.
So going back to your family, did you get on well with your brothers and sisters?
I only have one sister, and she's four and a half years older than me, and she left quite and got married at the age just over when she turned 17. So it was mainly my brothers that were around. So because there was a lot of issues that were happening there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you left home. You left school.
Mm.
You went to did a business course and started working. So did you get along well with people?
In the work environment. Yeah. I had a lot of associates. I had a lot of people I'd chat to, but I wouldn't tell my story about my background. I was hesitant. At times, I would think I would overtrust, if that makes sense. But other times, it was sort of like I couldn't tell them what was happening at home. Wouldn't tell anybody what was happening at home. I'd have a mask up, so I'd put that. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Did you find that you progressed at work?
Yes, I was able to. I threw myself into work. It was sort of like that was my one thing that I could, and that's how I was able to progress into starting from just doing day-to-day bookkeeping and work my way up into managing and operating the computers in the office at the time.
Right. Okay. Yeah, well, computers were a big thing when they first came in, weren't they? I was there too.
we had the big old Honeywell with the heavy disk drives and God knows what. Mm. And they were in the process of actually bringing in the more modern ones at the time, where they could just sit on the desk and have disks and things like that. So less complicated.
Yes. So did you find that the more money you had, the more money you gambled?
I don't think, no, because like while I was working in the, as I progressed, so while I was working in the office, no, because I didn't earn that much anyway. When I first started work, I can remember I earned, can I say?
Yeah.
I earned $25 a week.
Yeah.
That's
this is a long time ago.
After tax was taken out. So I thought I was rich and I had to pay board as well. So I didn't have much money to think about. But so even when I left that industry, it was there'd be it was lucky if I earned $150, I think, at the time. So sort of like it certainly has progressed since then.
Yes.
Yes, well and truly. That's when I left that field.
Yep.
And then I went and studied.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so was the motivation to study to get a better job or just to get a different job?
It was to get a different job.
Okay.
It was I'd had enough of that in that and working in that sector. I sustained an injury, and so I decided to have a career change. I liked, and so I went into the welfare sector because I liked working with people, especially young people. I'd done volunteer work while I was working in an office. I'd done volunteer work where it was working at a youth club and also with basketball.
Okay. Mm. So was there any time in any of those places that you found that your gambling affected what you were doing?
Not in my early no, not during those times.
Yeah.
It didn't affect what I at the time it didn't affect. As it progressed, as I went into the welfare sector, and we would I would often go because it can be stressful at times. So
yeah.
I would go out for drinks after a shift and go to a venue and again donate money to the venue, as I call it, and at times I thought that was okay. Again, I was able to manage. By that stage I think we could you could start to withdraw money from places, so you had access to ATMs, started to have access to ATMs, so I would just still go and be able to manage. But because I worked shift work, and I think I realized that when I had any extra money, like if I worked over the holidays and sort of like got more money because of the penalties, I noticed I would be able to spend more money then.
Right.
Donate more money to the venues, as I call it. That's how I call it anyway. And I would – so my time at the venues would increase because I'd have more money to give them and less money to spend. And that progressed.
Okay. So how did it start impacting your life as you found that you didn't have sufficient money to do things that you usually did?
It had an impact on how I would steal from work. We at times in one of the places where I worked, we had a payphone, so I would take all the dollar coins out of the payphone. I would have the key to be able to empty it, so it was always had less money. I would make out that it had less money in there than what it was meant to have.
Right.
I would take food from work because I wouldn't have any money to actually buy food. I would walk home after visiting a friend at the time. If I wasn't living there, I would walk home from the station because I'd donate my last amount of money that I would have for a taxi to get home if I'd spent that money. Then I would have to walk home.
Right.
Which was probably an hour walk.
Yeah. And what time of night was it?
Midnight. After midnight. Yeah.
After a risky.
Very risky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very risky. The only thing would be I'd make certain that my phone was charged. So, and I'd have my
Personal alarm.
My thumb ready on 000 if I needed to,
right.
Sort of thing. But yes, and there were areas where it was pretty, where walking definitely wasn't safe.
So at the venue, a lot of people talk about it sort of being able to sort of zone out and not think of anything else apart from what they're gambling. Did you find that was a way to block out?
It was, but I'd also think other people were obviously doing the same thing because I'd see the same people at the same venue and think, they've got a problem. not thinking that I had a problem, but I used to be able to feel as though I could zone out and forget about whatever was happening, whether it was work or personal or whatever. I would zone out completely and just be fixated on wanting to win.
That's good. Okay, listen, we might take a short break.
Don't have $1 million and still want to have a good education for your kid? Tune into the Dogs program. We are the defenders of government schools. 12 p.m. on Saturdays here on 3CR. 855 on the AM dial podcast, streaming live on 3cr.org.au and 3CR digital. We defend government schools because they need it.
This is the Living Free Show on 3CR, 855 kHz on your AM dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just search 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can contact us via phone or email. Today I'm talking with Sue about recovery from compulsive gambling through Gamblers Anonymous. You started gambling a little bit more. You started gambling a lot more times.
Yeah.
So how did that start to affect your life? Did you start seeing gambling as a treat or a retreat from normal life?
I think I probably did. I without realizing it, I would often go with my mum. And take her to venues, and then or with work, and then when I think it increased when I became befriended, made friends, and I ended up becoming codependent with this friend in that because she was a single mom with three kids, and she had been diagnosed with having a genetic degenerative disease, and so I wanted to be there for her, and avoidance from my family, and for quite a number of years, I had no contact with my family because of that, by choice. And we became enmeshed in this with my friend. And so I would often find, because of her outbursts and things like that, I would go to a venue to actually disassociate from everything and just be mesmerized with the machines. And I also wanted to, I felt like, I don't know when it became the invisible line where I was, became that compulsiveness took over, where I was always there. But I can remember constantly going to different venues, hoping to win big, and then because I wanted to be a philanthropist and be able to provide for my friend trips, different things, that definitely never happened. But I can remember going to different and increasing my bets were increasing. I would be short on cash And so I'd steal from my employer, hoping to pay it back at times. I can remember on one occasion where I didn't think I was going to be able to pay it back in time, so they wouldn't know, and I physically harmed myself and so I didn't attend work for the week, which then gave me enough time to actually put the money back, because I didn't go to a venue during that time.
So you're able to control actually gambling, but once you got there, it was difficult.
Yeah, it was very difficult. I think also the fact of being able to access, like at the time, the ATMs were actually still in the venues, so you could just, you know, I'd go with a plan and say I'd only, you know, donate this much, and so like, okay, that went very quickly, so I better go and get some more, and I'd take money out again and continuously do that, and until such time as I'd have no money in my account. I'd also, because of working in the welfare sector, I got sort of like paid twice, so I get my normal pay and then the I forget what it's called, the extra pay.
Yep.
And on different days. So it was when phone banking became accessible, I'd be on my phone as first thing Wednesday morning, checking to see if any money had, if my pay had gone in. And then as soon as it went in, it'd be maybe before work, I'd be off to a venue before going to work, or after finishing work, I'd go to a venue.
Yeah. So did your friend notice the change in you?
Yeah, she actually saw that I hadn't told. Initially, she did say that I'd be getting very frustrated. Not having money, I couldn't go to family events because I couldn't afford it, couldn't go out buy certain treats, or it'd be at Christmas time not able to give certain presents to people, because I didn't have the money, and there would be often conflict, especially when I was living with at my friend's place. I was in a caravan at the back, and I would be paying her rent and bills, and sometimes I wouldn't have the money to pay, so it created a lot of conflict there. And she tried to help by offering suggestions of, you know, sort of like a way of using my money constructively, was buying groceries for the house as a way of contributing, and so therefore not having as much money to waste or donate to the venues. That just created more conflict, because then I felt like I needed to get to a venue. I wanted to get to that venue, and not having any money. But then I was able to, during that time, I was able to have credit cards.
Okay.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was able to have access to, I had three credit cards going, a personal loan, and then you could access the all the pay-as-you-go places.
Payday lender things.
Payday lenders. And I think at one stage, I think I had two or three going all at once, at the one time as well, the three credit cards, the personal loan, and an overdraft. I forgot about that one. The bank gave me an overdraft as well. So I sort of like had this, and it was quite easy to just sort of like say, yeah, you can increase your credit card. Yeah, that's fine. So I didn't see it as an issue. I never borrowed cash on my credit card, but I'd always use it to pay for things. So my pay was donated to the venues, my credit cards were used to be able to buy food, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did you pay? How did you satisfy payday lenders? That sounds like a disaster.
It was frustrating at times because I had a bank book. So, like, I had a bank book. So I would have to take it and I'd forget to, like, I wouldn't go to the bank all the time. But I'd have this, I'd have my state bank account, but I'd have an EPOS card. So the bank book, because you had to show proof of how much you earned or whatever. So I'd have to take it to the bank, get them to update it all, and then take it. Yeah. It was frustrating, very frustrating. And sometimes it was just they would condense it and I'd say, no, I want the whole thing because I've got to prove it. Mm. And sometimes I would go on one particular place I'd go to, they'd regularly knew me, so it was sort of like it was acceptable. I even took out personal loans from them while I had other loans.
Yeah.
They just gave it to you. Yeah. It was just crazy.
It's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is crazy.
So how did you pay them all back?
Slowly.
Right, okay.
So it wasn't until, like, the payday ones, that was probably the first.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I got into Gamblers Anonymous that I actually was able to start looking at paying the three credit cards. Paying those things off.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I got to GA.
Right. Okay. Well, we must talk about what motivated you to go to GA.
What motivated me? Not having any money. no, my friend that's now passed, she was a member of another fellowship, right. And she was the one that actually took me to my first GA meeting. It was quite scary, and it was I felt intimidated because I'd been to the other fellowship with her, and I'm not a member of that, but I went and it was run totally different to what the GA meeting that I attended was. So I was a bit put off at the time. And then so a friend of hers was also a member of the GA. She asked them to take me to Albert Park meeting. And I went there that first Saturday and it felt like I was coming home. It felt comfortable. Yeah. And I've been there ever since.
Good.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about more about that after the break.
Okay.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
This is the Living Free Show on 3CR Digital Radio, live streaming on 3cr.org.au, and we're talking with Sue about compulsive gambling and recovery through Gamblers Anonymous. So, Sue, before the break, we were talking about getting into Gamblers Anonymous and finding a meeting that you felt more comfortable in. Yeah. So would you like to tell us a bit about your initial thoughts of GA and the things that I guess that resonated with you?
When I first went to the Albert Park meeting, I felt quite comfortable, and But it took me about 3 months to actually admit I was powerless over gambling. I knew my life had become unmanageable, and that was because I thought, I'm not very good with my finances because I'm always running out of money. And so I thought, if I go to GA, they'll be able to help me sort out my finances, help me with my And but actually owning, like reading that first step of being, my life had become unmanageable because of powerless over gambling. I actually took me 3 months. So I'd read it every week, but 3 months of actually, it hit me of why my life had become unmanageable because I was powerless over gambling. And I listened and shared. And as I kept attending meetings, I became more honest with myself. And initially, in the initial days, I was very scared about I was nearing getting closer to retirement age, and my biggest fear was being able to access my super. And I thought I'd blow it all donating it to venues. And so during my recovery, as I was starting my journey of recovery, I have been able to. It took me quite a long period of time to, before I was able to actually pay off all my debts. I'm now debt free. But that took quite a long time. And I have been able, one of the other things I neglected was my health, over that, the journey of while I was gambling. Since I was able to continue attending Gamblers Anonymous meetings, I was actually able to look after my health, and I've had 2 hip replacements. I was able to be have choice about where I went to have those operations because I was able to have pay for private health, whereas in my gambling days that was not an option at all by choice.
Yeah. So can I ask you, does GA offer any assistance with clearing your debts as far as strategies and things?
Well, I can't answer that. It's just about how it is for an individual. They don't, GA itself, from my understanding, doesn't, can't answer that one. It doesn't help. It helps you be able to try and sort out what you can talk to other people about how they've managed to work through their debts.
Yeah.
I think it's an individual, personal thing, from my understanding.
Makes sense. I was just wondering if there was a sort of a focus on helping, you know, helping people who are just in there with understanding their responsibilities and, you know,
what they can and can't. I think it's about every person's story is different.
Yep.
Although there's similarities, and how they've been able to manage their debts. Some people have used banning themselves from certain websites and things like that, going to venues and banning themselves from venues continuously, or using other people have known to using cardless, like gift cards and things like that, as a way of managing their being able to condense their funds to deter them from gambling.
Right. Okay. So, I was going to ask you a deep and meaningful question.
Yeah,
I've forgotten.
Go for it.
So, how long have you been in GA now?
Okay, I'm been in GA. Sorry, just had to have a bit of water. I've been in GA since March 2017.
Okay.
So it's been eight and a half years.
Yeah.
8.5 years now. Yeah.
Okay. So what are the biggest changes you've found in your life?
Biggest changes are when I was gambling, I wanted to be a philanthropist and win big all the time and not have – and while I was gambling, I never had time to do things I liked or be able to travel because I never had the money. Since coming to Gamblers Anonymous, my terminology for philanthropists has changed, be in the sense that it's not about just about having money to donate. I can donate my time.
Yep.
I volunteer for a not-for-profit organisation, and I love it. I get enjoyment and satisfaction from being there and donating my time for that. I've been able to travel and be able to have choice. I recently spent a night at the Werribee Mansion. I'd never been there before.
Yep.
Was able to shout myself that. I'd never been able to do that during my gambling days at all. I've met some fantastic people during GA that also are members of GA that are good friends and they have an understanding of the struggles that I may face.
Yeah, it's the acceptance, isn't it?
That
very much everybody has a problem. You have this specific problem, and So, have you managed to build up assets since?
I bought a car.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been able to during my gambling days. I initially had a car, but then the engine blew up, and that was it. So I'm a master of public transport. until just before, as part of my retirement, I've recently retired in July, and part of my retirement was that I bought myself a car. So I'm proud owner of a new car. It's not brand new, but it's a good car, and it gets me around. So I still use public transport a bit, but the car's a luxury. So yes,
okay,
as well.
Yeah. So what's it like to have a holiday or be able to have holidays when you couldn't really before?
It's about having choice and having the freedom to be able to do the things. I think the luxury of not only going on holidays, it's just going out and having a meal and being able to treat others rather than sort of like scrimping and begging others to pay for your food. So it's having choice, more choice in my life, and freedom. I'm learning to play the African drums. So,
oh, wow.
And I've bought myself a drum. They're not cheap either, but I've bought myself a drum. I've always wanted to do it, and so now I'm able to do that.
Right.
And I'm going overseas next year. I've never been overseas before, and so being able to,
That's great. Now, over lunch we were chatting, and you mentioned you'd come on to 3CR 40 years ago or so. Do you want to talk a bit about what that was like for you?
I came in here. I was an incest survivor, so I was involved in domestic violence incest resource center, and was there as a placement for my the course I was doing at the time, but also was involved in one of their support groups, and we came in to do an interview.
Okay.
At the time, and it was how far back it was. It was Johnny Farnham had released "You're the Voice," and we actually had that playing.
Okay.
during part of our interview.
Right.
So yes.
Okay. So what's the place like now compared?
I can't remember. Honestly, can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. So the other thing we usually talk about is your dealings with other people now, has that changed? Are you able to be, I guess, more open and honest with other people?
Definitely, definitely. I don't have to hide. I can speak my truth at any given time on how I'm feeling. I'm not afraid of how people respond. It's how it's their, if however they respond, it's their issue, not mine. So I look at it that if I'm speaking my truth, that's how it is for me.
Yeah.
The
other one that often talk about with gamblers is rebuilding trust with people after, you know, taking money and and being deceptive. So what's that journey been like for you, rebuilding trust?
Trust has always been an issue for me from childhood. So there's I'm still developing that. So there's only certain, like at GA, I definitely trust the people that are there. I know that I can speak the truth at any given time. But out in the bigger society, I'm still selective about who I trust, who I'm open with, but I've become more open and honest with people as I continue on my journey for recovery.
Mm. Do you let people know that you were a problem gambler?
I've only let a selective few only know from, and that's still a fear of, I suppose it still there's a fear of rejection or being judged.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm selective. And that's because in the past when I've told people about my past history, not from gambling, from the abuse, there's been a negative reaction. So I'm still very hesitant with that. But there are people that know. So one of the people from the not-for-profit, I sort of like openly just said, told her, and there was no issue at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's still sometimes that fear of being judged with regards to that.
Yep, yep. We're just seeing if Zakiya had a question. She doesn't. That's okay.
I'm just a good listener. The story is amazing.
So I guess what would you say to somebody who was like you, who didn't really think you had a gambling problem but were at a pokies venue often? What sort of things would have helped you to hear at that point?
Oh, good question. That I'd probably check out the GA. Just come and check out a meeting. If you're constantly running short of cash, short of money, because it's going to venues, I'd just take that. It's hard, but making that first, taking that first step, that it's a big leap, but taking that first, get your foot in the door, and people there have been in the same boat. They had to take that step, but once the door's open, you take that step and you walk in, there's help there, and people are willing to listen and help you. And if you stuff up, if you have a hiccup, it's okay. Nobody judges you. You just come, if you can come back again, step your foot in the door, because there's lots of people that have had hiccups.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, I haven't had a hiccup yet, but there's that possibility, so I have to keep that in mind.
Yep. Yes. Yes. It's never cured.
No.
No. If anybody would like to find out more about Gamblers Anonymous, you can phone them in Melbourne on 03 9696 6108, or you can go online at gaaustralia.org.au for more information on recovery from compulsive gambling. So that's about all we've got time for today. So I'd like to thank Sue for sharing her gambling recovery story with us and talking about how being a member of Gamblers Anonymous helps in recovery. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. I hope you'll be able to join us again next week when Michael will be discussing recovery from alcoholism with Chris, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Coming up next, we have Ballon Wah, The Spirit of Wah, hosted by Uncle Talgum Choco Edwards. Join Uncle Choco and The Spirit of Wah on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarns. Thanks for listening. stay safe, and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.